Support for the Morning Show comes from the Carthage College Office of Continuing Studies, providing graduate and accelerated certification programs in education to start or advance a career in teaching. Convenient evening and summer courses are designed for the working adult. More information is available at carthage.edu/grad. Support for the Morning Show also comes from Andrea's, a Kenosha tradition since 1911. A unique shopping experience time and time again, and that's what brings you back. And don't forget about Jack's Cafe, Andrea's, 2401 60th Street, online at andreasgifts.com. And we welcome you to the Thursday Morning Show. I'm Gregory Berg. WGTD News Time is 8:10. And we welcome you to the Thursday Morning Show on WGTD-HD, your gateway to public radio. I'm Gregory Berg. I'm delighted to have sitting across from me here in the WGTD studios this morning, four faculty and staff colleagues from Carthage. And we are speaking on the eve of yet another homecoming celebration at Carthage. And that celebration is enhanced or enriched by the grand opening, the ribbon-cutting ceremony that signals the official opening of the David A. Straws Jr. Center for the Natural and Social Sciences. The Straws building already was there, but it has undergone quite a startling and spectacular makeover, refurbishing, which is really quite impressive. And this weekend signals an opportunity for anyone in the community to not only join in the festivities of homecoming, but also to get a very close look at this beautiful new facility on the Carthage campus. Joining me today to talk about all of this, first of all, two faculty colleagues, Kevin Crosby, professor of physics and dean of the Natural and Social Sciences Division at Carthage. Professor Crosby was on the Morning Show some years ago, too many years ago, to talk about the great physicist Richard Feynman. And also joining him today, someone who's been a more recent guest on the Morning Show, Deanna Burns, Associate Professor of Biology and Dean of the School of Professional Studies at Carthage. She was on the Morning Show not terribly long ago, I would say within the last year,
About a year ago.
Right, to talk about one of her areas of specialty, bats. And had a fascinating conversation. I hope someday we'll get to have a follow-up to that. Also here on the Morning Show, joining us is Bill Hoare, who is Associate Vice President for Business at Carthage. I get that impressive title correct?
That's correct. Yeah.
Very good. It almost seemed too short for all of the things that you do on behalf of Carthage. And then finally, last but certainly not least, Elaine Walton, who is Associate Vice President for Institutional Advancement at Carthage. Elaine is someone who is instrumental in the putting together of all kinds of special events which happen at Carthage, but her new responsibilities, or relatively new responsibilities, go far beyond making sure there's enough punch and cookies for the dignitaries. She does a lot of very, very important work on behalf of the college and its continual enrichment. So a warm welcome to all four of you to the Morning Show. Elaine, let's begin with you, just kind of a general overview about sort of the spectacular fun that's always to be had at homecoming. And what kind of responsibilities do you and the folks in your office have to put each and every homecoming celebration together?
Well, I oversee the homecoming celebrations a weekend, and that just means I bring everyone together to make sure everything's coming together and happening. So a group of us work on it. It would be the Dean of Students' Office works with all the students on their activities. Our office handles coordinating the parade, what alumni do, different events related to it. We have the pep rally on Friday night. We have the opening of the Science Center and the ribbon cutting on Saturday morning. We have a breakfast for alumni. We have an alumni choir program, recital on Sunday. So I just work with everyone on campus to bring all those things together so people coming to campus have a wonderful time and a great weekend. And I think my main job is to deliver really good weather.
Mm. Well, you are doing that in very fine fashion this time around. Looks like sunshine.
Looks good.
A little bit brisk, a perfect fall day for all that's going to be going on. I suppose one of the tricky things is to figure out what should happen when. And you want to, as much as you can, avoid having things happening simultaneously, or if they're going to happen simultaneously, you want to make sure they're fairly discrete sorts of audiences that are involved so people aren't forced to miss things they want to see and experience.
That is very true. We do try to coordinate it so that we have a very full weekend, but that, and there can be some overlap, but we like people to be able to attend whatever they wish. And so, yes, we try to balance our recital with our theater performance and the football game with everything else that's going around that goes on that during the weekend.
Any idea how many people actually come back for homecoming? Is it possible to even count?
Impossible to count, because on that Saturday, you never know who's going to show up for the football game. But we think it's probably close to 3,000.
That's correct.
More.
It varies from year to year. Weather plays a role. Mm-hmm. The classes that are being remembered that year play a role.
Mm-hmm. That's very true. But I would say especially we should have a very good turnout this weekend. If the weather's good, if it's not raining, we will get a lot of people coming. They'll start rolling in primarily Saturday morning. They'll come for the parade. A lot of families will come. We try to make it a family-friendly event. So we have a bounce house. We'd have different activities for children and a very fun, very homegrown parade that's just the length of Campus Drive. But we throw out a lot of candy, and the students have a lot of fun. And so it should be a very robust weekend.
Mm. And Mother Nature's cooperating beautifully.
Yes.
As you mentioned, one of the hallmark events this weekend will be the ribbon cutting for the David A. Straws Junior Center for the Natural and Social Sciences. And this is a building that many people have seen if you've been on campus, but if you haven't seen it recently, you haven't really seen it, because even on the surface, from the outside, it looks spectacularly beautiful and new. And I suppose you step inside it, and you see things that even more of a meaningful transformation of it. Maybe somebody, and I'm not sure who should do this, can kind of give us a historic overview in terms of maybe two of our science professors, why it was so necessary for something dramatic to happen with the Straws Center, at least as far as the natural sciences were concerned. What was the sort of most urgent kind of need we're talking about?
Sure. Well, the building was built in, I think it was, and Bill can correct me, 1964 or 5 in that area. And 61?
61, it was the first building built on campus.
Was it really?
Yeah. Huh.
And I think at that time, you know, when we moved into it in the mid-60s, the sciences were very different, very simple. It was built with three floors to represent the three disciplines that inhabited it. So we had physics, chemistry, and biology. And since that time, obviously, science has changed a little bit. It's become a lot more interdisciplinary, and it's adopted a lot more breadth, I would say. And so we have eight departments and several programs that coexist in the building now. And we needed a space to accommodate those classrooms and faculty and research facilities.
Hmm. Is the building appreciably bigger, or is it more that it is a redistribution of the space that was already there?
Well, the Science Center project in total is about 105,000 square feet. It's 35,000 square feet of new construction, primarily towards the lakeside of the building, and 70,000 square feet of remodeling, which is primarily the science labs and general teaching classrooms.
Hmm. So when we drive past it, the building it looks different, but it doesn't look appreciably larger, because most of the enlargement is sort of hidden from view if you're on Campus Drive.
Well, one of the goals in this particular project was to, I think, correct an error of our forefathers when they constructed the campus in 61, where they plumped buildings on either side of a pre-existing roadbed and in general turned their back to the lake. And most people now would say the lake is one of the largest accoutrements of the campus, and why do we ignore it? In this particular project, the design was to open up the lakefront and make it part of the usable space for our students and faculty. And again, if you happen to see the lakeside of the building, I think you'll see a working plaza and space that, quite frankly, we're not done constructing yet. There are certain elements that are going to be installed just in the next couple of weeks that will make it an even better working space.
Hmm. So what has life been like for you in the science departments, in the science division before this? I mean, were you just hanging from the rafters and making do with antiquated technology? Or, I mean, what has it been like to try to function in this space in something as inherently cutting edge as the sciences?
Well, there were some challenges, but I think part of the new construction, what it did for us was to alleviate a lot of pressure in overlap of needing to use spaces for various things at the same time. Mm. So there was a lot of scheduling challenges, and when getting ready for labs, there's a lot of prep that has to happen. We didn't have a space for that before, so I think it forced us to maybe impinge on other people's space a little bit more than we have to now. Mm. Now we have spaces dedicated for that. We can have classes prepped in an area that's not the class space so that things are ready to go when we have the class. So kind of behind the scenes, we didn't have that space before. It allows us to, it allows students to have research projects that don't have to be torn down or to take space that's used for classes right now. That's a big benefit of the kind of the restructuring of the building, so students can have long-term projects, long-term research, come back and work on them even if there is a class going on in a classroom, because they're not using that space for their research.
For those of you just joining us, we are talking about the David A. Strauss Center for the Natural and Social Sciences at Carthage College. We're speaking on the eve of homecoming, and one of the homecoming activities this weekend will be a special ribbon-cutting ceremony Saturday morning at 10:30, which sort of officially opens the doors of this beautiful center, although it's obviously been open for business this entire school year. In fact, were you already settled in pretty much by the start of the summer, or at what point were you able to kind of reestablish yourselves in this new space?
This was a three-phase opening, so we moved into the first phase, which is the eastern wing of the building, primarily research labs and faculty offices.
And some of the south.
Yeah, and some of the south as well. Early in the winter, I think it was around January that we first moved in. The second phase opened up around June in the summer, and that consisted sort of the primary, the center core of the building, and then the phasing progressed to the north, and so as of the first day of classes is really when we had the entire building open to us for the first time. So it was a very tight schedule, as Bill can tell you. Working with the architects has been
interesting. We were painting walls as the students were coming in for the first day of classes.
Wow. Well, let's find out a little more about the gauntlet, which took us to moving in day or moving in days and the three phases of it. First of all, at what point was it sort of officially determined that this needed to happen? We need to refurbish the David A. Strauss Center, and I assume that's a decision that ultimately is made by the Board of Trustees, or does someone else make that decision first, and then they give the okay?
The campus leadership and the Board of Trustees indeed control the investment, the capital investment for the campus. This particular project was started, 4 years ago? Mm-hmm. I would say 5 years ago in terms of the advanced planning, but 4 years ago we actually started the work with the architectural firms, the lab planners, and the faculty were brought in and started the process of wish listing and small groups of interviews and what are your needs, and then focusing in on the programming of the space. What can we put into this space? What are the important adjacencies between these particular spaces? That progressed through the traditional conceptual design development, construction drawings. The actual start of construction was in March of 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. And as I said, we're in the punch list phase right now, so we're not actually completely done. So it's been overall about a 5-year project, and literally involved 100 people mm-hmm. involved in the planning of it.
I should say that the faculty actually started this project about 15 years ago,
yeah.
begging and pleading for new facilities, and that process has been ongoing through
buildings,
our advisory committees and so forth.
Buildings such as this are always built on sweat equity of the faculty, and one of the stories I like to tell is, Scott's Scott putting together an aqua engineering center of 5-gallon aquariums and hoses that he bought at Menards, and for years utilizing that for research and teaching of students. And now through this particular process, there's a piece of equipment that's a $50,000 piece of equipment that is now doing that. But if it wasn't for the sweat equity of people like Absolutely. Scott and professors mm-hmm. before him, we never would have gotten to where we are today.
You couldn't have been teaching what you were teaching without that.
Right.
A lot of our listeners, I think, will be acquainted with the Clausen Center, which is on the north end of Straz, and that's, of course, a beautiful facility now, which once was the site of the library. At what point did that transformation occur, and was that transformation directly linked to the transformation of the rest of the building? Are they really kind of two separate projects which just happen to exist within the four walls of the same building?
The Clausen Center was constructed in 2000, well, it was opened in 2004, constructed in 2003, and I really have to say it was a separate project. The philosophies and the deliverables of the Clausen Center are completely different than the Science Center.
Right.
But if you do look at the building, it was one of the first buildings that the campus built, so it had to contain many things. And we look upon it as, in essence, three segments: the Clausen Center, the business school at the north end, the theater in the middle, which has still yet to be renovated, and the Science Center and the Science Wing, which is at the south end. And they work together for the greater good of our students, but they are indeed three separate functions within the college.
Right. I like to remind people that the first Christmas concerts at Carthage occurred in the Straz Center, in that big stairway area right outside of the auditorium. That's where I think most of the first big concerts happened. There was no other place to have them in the early going. So a lot of interesting things have happened within that building, of course, over the years. So this has to begin with designs and plans and so on. You've touched on that already. In terms of actually getting the project beginning, you have to actually have an architect to take all these ideas and sort of put them together. Tell us about the selection of this firm. It sounds like that was an interesting choice.
Sure. There was a team of administrators, and I believe myself as the faculty representative initially, and then Dr. Burns joined us later, who were tasked with selecting an architecture firm from. We had obviously a pretty good variety of people proposing to bid for the project, and the criteria that we established were pretty clear. We wanted it to be a really student-focused facility, and we wanted the firm to have some demonstrated history with building student-related facilities. And so the firm that was ultimately selected was the firm, Stantec, is now known. That's the new name of the firm. I believe it was Bird Hill previously. And they had just finished building the student center on campus. And we really appreciated the design ethos of that group, because they really seemed to want to focus on the transitions, the way that students would move through the building and the way they would engage with faculty. They placed office and lounge spaces close together so that faculty and students would have some, more opportunities to collaborate. They placed small research labs adjacent to these collaborative lounges, and paid real close attention to the way traffic moved through the building. And I think that was probably one of the deciding factors for us as we evaluated their proposal.
Oh, I see. So you were actually evaluating their initial design ideas. I mean, they actually came up with at least a rough idea of what they thought this building should look like, and that's what you got to respond to, not just a nice little presentation of theoretically, but they really...
Each firm proposed a concept design and walked us through it and talked about their design philosophy, and the one that most closely resonated with our team was the Stantec proposal. Mm.
There was a nationwide search of firms, and literally we looked at firms from New York to Boston, in this case Philadelphia, and the team of people from the campus traveled to sites to see the work that these firms had actually constructed. So it wasn't just looking on pieces of paper or looking to that PowerPoint presentation to the group of people. We wanted to go out and see actually their work and talk to the people who had hired them in the past and to literally watch the way that those buildings worked between the students and faculty.
Fascinating.
So one of the things that you asked before is what did we have before and what were the challenges? And in talking with the architects in the early design phases, a couple other things came through from the faculty side and the campus side that we wanted to change. And Kevin mentioned already the collaborative spaces or areas for students to gather either themselves to work on homework or to work with faculty on problems or whatever it is. Previously, we would have students sitting on the floor in the corridor because they had no other place to be, right? If they had to wait for their classes to open up, there was no space for them to gather. They would either, you know, they were always in transit or at the Starbucks or sitting on the floor in the corridor. So now if you walk through the building, you can see there are benches along the corridor. There are places all over in nooks and crannies and corners and tables and chairs and places for them to sit. And one of the things that we that the faculty noticed right away and we took pictures of and sent immediately to Ray and Stantec was when we opened in January in that first portion, some of those collaborative spaces were open and immediately students were inhabiting them. It was really fun to see. And so the building worked and it works in a way that I think we were hopeful for, but surprised that, and pleasantly surprised that the students really are using it in the way that we hoped that they would.
Right, and it sounds like they have exceptional judgment when it comes to that. That is, these architects. I mean, unlike some others that, for some reason, just don't seem to be able to think that way or put themselves in the position of students.
Maybe. I think it was key in choosing this particular architecture firm that had that mindset. And I guess I didn't realize either how different it was to have a science building that did this. And it's really great. I think it's one of the few, you know, it's not common for new science buildings to incorporate that kind of student-centered focus and ability to work together in groups and the interdisciplinary aspects of it. And If you walk through it, I mean, it does kind of serve a corridor, especially in winter. I think people are going to cut through the building to get to Starbucks from the other end of campus.
Right.
But part of the idea in designing the labs and the spaces was so that if you do walk through, you can see what's going on. You can see what science is. You know, you can see what students are doing. You can be part of it even if you're not in the sciences going to a class.
Another thing that was particularly unique about this project was the degree to which the administration let the faculty participate in, you know, in the design process from the beginning all the way through, down to the, you know, the veneers on the tables. We had some input on that, and the architect's willingness to listen to us about what we see as sort of modern pedagogy and the way that classrooms should be designed was really refreshing, and I think it's pretty unique across academic landscape. You won't see too many neat rows of tables with desks in front of an instructor station in this building. There's a lot more collaborative learning and face-to-face students sitting around round tables facing each other, peer instruction, all the things that we know work in terms of learning.
What about the matter of wish lists, which was part of this process in terms of everybody's wishes and trying to figure out ultimately whose wishes or which wishes are going to be addressed and which ones, sadly, cannot be. Is that a tricky or difficult or even potentially
Absolutely.
Awkward process?
Yeah, and so to address that, we had already had a group that had been thinking about these issues prior to the board approving the project. It was called the Learning Spaces Group at that time, and it was a group of faculty that were committed to improving our spaces to ultimately serve the way that we teach and the way students learn. And so we had a group that was very interdisciplinary and very collaborative and had been addressing these issues for quite a while. And when the building project was approved, that transitioned into what we call the building liaison team that Dr. Burns has been leading all these years, which actually are only four now that I think about it, but it seems like longer. Huh. And that's a group that was representative of all of the departments and programs that chose to participate and worked directly with the architects, directly with the administration, and met on a very regular basis and sort of was a two-way communication between the faculty, the architects, and the administration.
Wow.
Very effective, but yes, very challenging.
Yeah. Can you tell us more about that part of this process?
Well, we would have ideas that we would present to the designers, and they would come back with their designs, and we'd have to make decisions about, well, we can't have all of these things because we only have this amount of space, and it has to meet these goals. So then we would go back and forth with the faculty and try to figure out ways that we could make reasonable compromises that everybody could live with. One of the bigger picture things was also a constraint by the footprint of the building. And one thing that was on the big wish list was to have spaces more mixed up. So we were trying to break away from that one floor is chemistry, one floor, right? So that we could really model interdisciplinary learning and collaboration. But efficiency kind of dictated. If you walk through the building now, you'll kind of feel that biology is on one floor primarily and chemistry is on another floor. Because we just had to do it that way, too, because of the space constraints.
Right. So there's this philosophical wish, but this realistic wish takes hold.
But we got really close. It was good.
Right. I have a strong memory of one of those first meetings we had with the wish list. It was in a particular room that has a big glass wall, and I remember there had to be 500 sticky notes on that glass wall.
Yeah.
And I remember turning around and saying, well, we just designed a $120 million building.
Yeah. Right.
Now we have to roll up our sleeves and get to work. But indeed, the faculty and the end users made some extremely wise choices. You mentioned wish lists. One of the things that fell off the horizon was everyone would love to have this 200-seat lecture hall dedicated to guest lecturers or when the campus is going to host symposiums. Knowing that we're a teaching college and that our students come first, the needs of laboratories, the needs of research laboratories, the needs for the spaces where teaching takes place outside of the classrooms were given priorities, and that's a particular wish that just fell off that glass wall relatively quickly. And it was indeed the end users, the faculty, that were making those decisions in cooperation with the entire design team. And I think it worked well. So much so that we asked Deanna to join us, and she sat through every one of our trailer construction meetings for the last 2 years and got to see the nitty-gritty, the humor, the less-than-humorous meetings. So she got to see how the building gets built from the word go.
So did these meetings really happen in trailers?
Yes, the construction trailer.
Wow. So this
with hard hats and T-shirts and
is that
and
right?
Coffee.
Okay. And coffee. Lots and lots of coffee. Yeah.
Well, before we talk about that fun, Bill, I would be very curious to know, I'm not going to ask you a whole lot about money, but I do want to ask just about kind of the basic price tag of the building and how that figure was arrived at. Going into this, was it already determined, well, we have this much money to spend, or we can manage this amount of money, or did some of this wishing occur first? I mean, was it kind of a merging of visions? I mean, how does one arrive at the price tag?
There was not the building was not designed to a price tag. And you're correct, there are some times where the owner has X amount of money to spend, and that's it. That's all you have in your checkbook. So the building needs to be designed to that. Dr. Campbell would always lecture us and tell us that these buildings are generational issues. They're not for us. They're for the next generations of Carthage students coming along. And we need to take the long view. So, was there a budget established? No. There was some upper end limitations to what our board would like to have seen. I remember my boss kept saying, I don't want to see a budget with a 4 in it. yet it's a $42 million building. And in the end, I'm happy to say that the wise choice was that this is what we need. This is what it's going to have to be. And people just rolled up their sleeves and selected that and said, this is, now it's time for the word go.
We're speaking today on the morning show about the David A. Straws Center for the Natural and Social Sciences on the campus of Carthage, which is about to celebrate homecoming. We have with us today Bill Hoare, Associate Vice President for Business. We have Elaine Walton, Associate Vice President for Institutional Advancement. And two of the science professors who were most directly affected by the transformation of the Strauss Center, Kevin Crosby, professor of physics, Deanna Burns, associate professor of biology. Did I say that right? Physics for Kevin and biology for Deanna Burns. And each of them are a dean, Kevin, dean of natural and social sciences, Deanna Burns, dean of professional studies. And this David A. Strauss Center for the Natural and Social Sciences opened this fall, although, as Bill Hoare keeps reminding us, they're tiny little things. What did you call them? They're little items yet to be just...
Punch list items?
Punch list items, yes. Talk for a moment about the actual construction phase once sort of a design is centered upon. And one of the things I wonder is, once you've really hammered out the plan to the last detail about exactly what this building's going to look like and what's going to be inside it, once you finish that, then how quickly can the first spade go in the ground then and construction actually begin, commence?
Well, I'll start by saying that we are very lucky in the Kenosha, Racine, Walworth County area to be blessed with extremely high-quality constructors, the firms that actually build buildings. And we had a wealth of good firms to select from. The contractors had to go through the same process the architects went through, and they were selected by a committee of people that included the people sitting at this table, as well as Board of Trustees and campus leadership. It's important in a process like this, in a building that's as complex as this, to bring the construction experts on actually before the design of the building is done. And by utilizing that tool, the experts in construction work with the architects through the last phase to through the synergy of the experts of construction and the experts of design. In this particular case, we've documented close to $2 million worth of construction savings that were done just due to that knowledge coming to the table at the same time. The constructors, in this particular case, it was Riley Construction, an excellent local firm, began the process of planning the construction as much and as detailed as the architects would design it, and began to lay out what they perceived to be the schedule of start to finish, soup to nuts. In this particular case, one of the interesting problems we had is that we had to tear the entire east wall of the building off over a spring break, 5 days, and oh, by the way, every one of the rooms on the inside of the building has to be ready and functional when school starts again on Monday morning. So it takes experts in knowledge of constructability issues to be able to pull off tactics such as that.
Right. And I mean, just the timeline to make sure that you are at a point in the process where you're ready for that to happen, and it has to happen in that relatively brief window of opportunity.
Right. And this particular building had numerous obstacles such as that had to be overcome. And again, it's the experts that are brought to the table that allow Carthage to be able to achieve the goal of this building. It takes hundreds and hundreds of people. I mean, I think at the high at one time, we may have had over 110 people working on the construction site at one time.
Wow.
All while 4,000 seats are being served each semester without interruption. So
right.
We
I just wanted
to operate the buildings.
Right.
Throughout.
I wanted to ask you what that was like, and the way, to what extent did you have to do what you do differently?
I think we should take a moment to thank all of the faculty right now for putting up with it.
Yeah.
How many times did the fire alarm go off?
Yeah. Oh, my.
Yeah.
Well, it was an interesting puzzle. I mean, for those of us that love puzzles, it was fun to think about a way to, build the airplane while you're flying it and serve 4,000 seats while you're tearing down their spaces around them and do it without adding too much dust or noise and rebuild those facilities into what we have today, which are really pretty spectacular.
Wow. I especially don't understand, I mean, when work was being done on these rooms over here, then where did that stuff go and those people go during that time when those rooms were absolutely unusable? Someplace else in Strauss or someplace else in other buildings?
Yes and yes. All of the above and additional storage facilities that Bill brought in for for temporary use, and we had to stage things into them because we knew we wouldn't be able to get to them while they were stacked full of materials. So there was a lot of logistical process learning and on the fly sort of decision making as we try to move 100 and some thousand square foot building in and out of itself while also teaching and permitting the folks who have scholarship agendas that are important to their tenure cases in some cases or just their professional lives to continue unabated.
Creating temporary classrooms out of the old student center, out of the old bookstore, creating office spaces in almost every nook and cranny on campus, creating open office annexes in an empty room in the Fine Arts Center, creating a theater department in a home.
Right. The theater department has occupied been particularly by the good.
Yes. I have to say that everyone was generally very, very good sports about it. And I think everybody knew that they were in the trenches together, and it was the long vision as to what the outcome was. And so people suffered and suffered greatly, but they did so in silence with good humor and great spirit.
Right. Well, and of course, it helps when you have this spectacular goal at the end of it all. So we haven't talked much about theater, except mostly that the theater's in the middle between the Clausen Center and the Science Center, and that the auditorium itself, as far as I know, was not part of this process, but you just made it sound like the theater department, in fact, has been impacted by this. How so?
We had to basically vacate the building. We had to ask them to operate in spaces that they weren't accustomed to operating to. We took the Black Box Theater away for a term and a half. I'm happy to say that we gave it back to them in better nick than when we started. And they were absolutely first-class citizens and gentlemen about the whole scenario. We owe them a great deal of thanks. Performing arts on campus is one of those future goals of ours. Dr. Woodbird has made it very clear that perhaps the next project or one of the next projects we'll be looking at will be doing the same thing, looking at our particular facilities, what we have now, what the goals of the Fine Arts Division are, and moving them along towards hopefully having the same facilities that the Science Division now enjoys. Mm.
As exciting as that is, it's the part that's not so exciting is thinking about what you guys experienced in trying to continue to do what you do under these circumstances. What a challenge, and how impressive that you managed to do all that you did. So now I remember, right adjacent to the art gallery, that open space that became office spaces, I suppose, for a lot of you, or
for some of us. And I mean, the entire campus was affected by the renovation.
And I should think too that the sciences, it must be particularly difficult. I hope no one takes offense at this, but it sort of feels like, at least in some ways, you can teach English or you can teach opera history in just about any kind of room, but you can't teach chemistry in just any room. You need the stuff with which chemistry is taught, or physics, or paleontology, or whatever. I mean, that's the part that is particularly amazing to me, the displacement of that kind of academic activity. Mm-hmm. Had to be especially challenging, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm. And it wasn't a trivial part of the whole decision-making process, and Bill, maybe you can speak to this, that we decided to... Well, I mean, I think we were constrained. We had to use the building while we were renovating it. We didn't have the option of moving someplace else,
right,
tearing it down, rebuilding it, and then moving back in for a lot of different reasons. It made sense in this situation that we needed to use parts of it while other parts of it were being built. So there were some, especially chemistry, I think, had to do some scheduling changes. They had to compress things a little bit or offer things in a semester when they usually don't. Mm. And so they're trying to bounce back from that. And you're right, math, maybe the science equivalent of English, like to pride themselves on not needing anything, just walking around with a marker and something to write on. So they were the easiest,
right.
Probably the least impacted by the classroom problems.
Hmm. Bill Hoare, tell us about the actual construction process. How swimmingly did it go? I mean, did it follow according to this hoped for schedule, pretty
well,
much?
Well, one of my isms is that a building is nothing but a series of compromises, which is why it was important for Deanna to sit there and be a part of the process, because you have to make decisions when things don't go as planned, and no plan survives contact with the enemy. Deanna was wonderful to be able to take those decisions that needed to be back to the faculty and be able to cut down the timeline in making those decisions so the design team could go back and take that input and make the corrections. I'm happy to say that it was a good design. The building was a 1961 era building, so we had abatement issues we needed to deal with. Luckily, we didn't run into too many problems with poor soils, but we found walls that weren't supposed to be there. We found walls that were supposed to be there but weren't.
Really?
Building archaeology is always interesting. We always wondered why there was no atrium on the south side of the building, and then we found the footprint where it was supposed to be one, but for some reason in 1961 it was never built. So, again, through the expertise of the designers, the architects, the engineers, and the expertise of the constructors, you just overcome those issues. You roll your sleeves back up. You identify the problem. You identify the resources that need to be brought to bear, and you just get it done. It does require, in this particular case, we had absolute deadlines. Being the start of academic terms, those students were going to show up. Those classrooms had to be ready. So if we can't change the schedule, we can only change the inputs, meaning that many of the contractors working on this project work 6 days a week, work 12-hour days, and we owe them a great deal of gratitude for doing that.
And some overtime, I assume.
Some overtime.
Right. And gratitude. Well, the happy story here is that, by and large, the most important deadlines all were met.
Yes.
How long is this punch list of sort of final details yet to be dealt with?
Well, it's not too bad. We did one of the realities we ran into is that in the Tri-County area, they ran out of electricians. In the last couple months of the project, there were no more electricians to be brought to bear. And we kept adding accoutrements onto the building, things that we wanted to see, and we had to make an agreement that although the building had to gain occupancy, the classrooms had to be there, the tools that the faculty needed to teach classes had to be in place, but there were certain items that didn't need to be in place. For example, a solar array on the roof, a wind generator that's going lakeside. Those don't affect the ability of people to teach classes. They will be nice accoutrements. They will be teaching tools that the faculty will be able to use in the future. But those are items that we put off until now, and you'll see them go in the next week. Our goal is by the end of October to have all of those things completed.
Wow, and the list done. So you guys need electricity in your building, is that right?
We do occasionally like to turn things
not
on.
Not the mathematicians.
No. See them blink.
Yes, right. I should think that one of the most marvelous things about this is not just the stuff that you get to do now, and you get to do it in the way you want to do it, but also when it comes to welcoming prospective students to campus who are thinking about studying science and thinking about studying at Carthage. You can show them a facility like this, whereas I suppose a year or two ago you were at a terrible disadvantage. I mean, for the high quality of what you managed to accomplish in spite of your facilities, I mean, when it comes time to show prospective students where it happens at Carthage, that had to be sort of a frustrating burden.
Yeah, we always had that issue with so many great things going on and wonderful projects and research opportunities for folks to get involved with right away as freshmen. But you have to pull them in and communicate those opportunities in a way that sort of compensates for the physical environment. And that was always a challenge. The yellow walls are legendary in the old Straz building. You walked in and you thought you might have been in a junior high shower stall of some kind. Mm. But I've been listening to the tours. I always do listen to the tours as they come through. And in the new building, I mean, you will hear gasps and just amazement on behalf of the prospective families as they see the views. If you walk into the south end of the building, you approach, at least on the first and the second floor, you're looking straight out east over the lake, and you see these broad vistas of Lake Michigan framed by trees and these beautiful, you know, bay windows and the conference rooms that are fully glassed and look like you're at the end of a cruise ship. And it is a spectacular view. It's an inspiring place to work. We've, you know, just talking to the faculty, they notice the level of students' engagement in the learning process has, you know, really heightened. I mean, people sit up straight and they pay a little more attention. They feel a little more important, and it's just a better place to learn.
Sure, and you walk in and you know Carthage cares about the sciences.
Absolutely.
And there's no question about it.
And there are other classes going on other than the sciences, as with all the other buildings on campus. You know, we've tried to schedule them fully, so you'll take Spanish classes in there. You'll take classes from all different disciplines.
Right, very good. Elaine, remind our listeners of the ribbon-cutting ceremony, when that occurs, and whether or not the general public is invited.
The general public absolutely is invited. We're having student-led tours that begin from 9 and go to noon. At 10:30, we will have a ribbon cutting outside on the sidewalk in front of the main entrance. And again, the Straz Center is at the north end of campus. It'll be very obvious where we're at. We'll have a little ceremony. It'll last maybe 15, 20 minutes. We'll have music from a Carthage Brass Ensemble playing. We'll have Mr. Woodward. We'll have John Sladek, one of our trustees and a champion of this new science center, speaking. And then again, we'll have tours, and we will have, the architects are providing us with a 3D cake in the image of the new building. So it should be fun, and we invite anyone and everyone to come and join us.
That's Saturday morning at 10:30, part of the homecoming festivities at Carthage College. And of course, you can go to the Carthage College website, carthage.edu, and go to the bridge. That would be the best place to find out any news about Carthage, including all that's going on at homecoming this weekend. Well, my thanks to all four of you for telling a really kind of complex and intriguing story so very, very well. Elaine Walton, Associate Vice President for Institutional Advancement. Bill Hoare, Associate Vice President for Business. Deanna Burns, Associate Professor of Biology and Dean of Professional Studies. And Kevin Crosby, Professor of Physics, Dean of the Natural and Social Sciences. Congratulations to all four of you and to all of your colleagues. And thank you for joining me today on The Morning Show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm Gregory Berg. Tomorrow on The Morning Show, it's the monthly visit of Brian Albrecht, the president of Gateway Technical College. Support for The Morning Show comes from the Carthage College Office of Continuing Studies, providing graduate and accelerated certification programs in education to start or advance a career in teaching. Convenient evening and summer courses are designed for the working adult. More information is available at carthage.edu/grad. Support for The Morning Show also comes from Andrea's, a Kenosha tradition since 1911. A unique shopping experience time and time again, and that's what brings you back. And don't forget about Jack's Cafe, Andrea's, 2401 60th Street, online at andreasgifts.com. Now for the weather forecast for southeastern Wisconsin and northeastern Illinois. It calls for mostly sunny skies today, windy, brisk conditions. Our high temperature today, 63 degrees. Clear skies overnight and very cool, an overnight low of 45 degrees. Tomorrow, Friday, will be sunny, a very windy, continued cool. Tomorrow's high, 62 degrees. Cooler still on Saturday, partly sunny skies, very windy, and a high on Saturday of just 58 degrees. Clouding up just a little bit on Sunday with a high of 59 degrees. We do still have mostly sunny skies Monday and Tuesday of next week, and daytime highs should climb back up into the 60s.